Hello again and welcome to I've Got a Beatles Podcast with Dave and Chris. We're actually kind of making up for lost time because we were looking back at our archives and realized that George Harrison has been truly the quiet Beatle in our podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
We haven't talked about him since, I don't even want to say, almost 6-7 months. So it's been quite a while. So yeah. We felt it was high time that we dig into one of George's albums that's celebrating an anniversary this year, as well as just being recently reissued on the Apple Years box set. So we are going to look at, and Chris, you should love this already just for the title because it's got a parenthetical title. We're going to look at George's 1975 album, Extra Texture, Read All About It.
Yeah, you know what we're going to do, Dave? We're going to look at that this album through a microscopic glass. We'll see if we can let its foibles pass.
That's pretty deep. That's really deep.
That's pretty deep. Lyric from The Answers at the End. Yeah. Dave, is it true, too, that you're the king of la-di-da? Is that... I heard that rumor going around.
Some call me that. Okay. I've been known to be called that in the past. So this is going to be a fun one here. So
yeah,
this is we did a review of Dark Horse last year because it was the 40th anniversary of Dark Horse, and this is the album that comes right after Dark Horse. It was released in September of 1975. So yeah. It was right after Dark Horse and the tour where George lost his voice.
And yeah, got bad review. Dark Horse got sort of rough reviews, and then the tour got rough reviews. George took a lot of that personally. He wasn't feeling so hot. Mm-hmm. Really, really disliking the critics. Not used to critics disliking him.
Yeah, so it was just kind of a bad time for George. So at the end of 1974, he started recording this album, and I think it's kind of interesting that it was not recorded in England, really. It was recorded in Los Angeles. And so that maybe gives it more of a, I don't know, slick type sound, maybe a different type of production. We'll get into that. But it's also famous because it's the last
George
release on Apple when they were a group. So
yeah.
And I guess George was trying to be cheeky and humorous because on the album itself, I have the LP. On the album, there's not an apple, but a half-eaten apple.
Yeah, hilarious. One of many hilarious jokes in this album, including that extra texture. Get it? No, we don't.
Oh, boy. Okay, so we're going to try something a little different in our...
Yeah.
Chris, you are ready to go on this one.
We're going to have fun with this album. This album historically has gotten sort of mixed reviews at best.
Yes.
We're going to have fun with this album. There are some good things. There are some bad things. If you're a person who does not like when we trash a bunch of songs... from the Beatles, you might want to listen to a little bit of it and then skip the say last half of this album or this podcast. But
we'll see. I don't know. I may come in. I may surprise you a little bit here. So I
this might be an agree to disagree on every track.
Well,
who knows?
I don't know about that, but it'll be fun and it was kind of interesting to do the research for this and learned quite a few things about the album I had no idea about, as well as having a good email exchange with friend of the show Catherine, who has weighed in. She's a super George fan and has been pretty helpful in the past. She's fun to exchange ideas with on this, so it kind of made me think about some things a little bit differently than I had before. So instead of just going track by track straight through, we have a challenge, or we gave ourselves a challenge here. So we decided to take the 10 songs on the album, and I'm going to put them into three different categories. And Chris wittily came up with the names of these categories, and I'll do the translation after you say what the name of the category is.
So the first category is Read All About It.
And those would be essential songs.
Yeah. And the second category is read some about it.
And those would be what we call so-so songs.
Yeah. And then the third category, don't read all about it.
Which gets the forgettable or dud type songs.
Yeah, duds.
Duds.
I love duds.
I know you do. I know. So we'll go through the songs and put them into these categories. And before we do that, I just wanted to mention a little bit about some of the people who play on this album, because it's kind of interesting. There's some surprises here. The biggest surprise to me probably was that you may not know the name David Foster, but if you're in the music world, the popular music world, you certainly do, because he's a huge, big-time producer, songwriter who produced lots of big 80s hits like St. Elmo's Fire, Natalie Cole's Unforgettable, Whitney Houston, I Will Always Love You, Chicago's Hard Habit to Break, things like that. But he was a session musician in L.A. along with a couple other people on the album, and that's how he met George. So he's actually playing a lot of keyboard on here. So that's something that's different. Jim Keltner, a lot of the usual George sidemen are here. Klaus Voormann, people like that. But so the band itself is pretty good, or the people who play on the songs. It's a pretty good personnel list. Now, yeah. The actual songs we'll get into now.
All right. So here's the very quick track listing. Since we're not going to do them in order, here's the track listing. Side one is You, The Answers at the End, This Guitar, Can't Keep from Crying, Oh Baby, You Know That I Love You, and World of Stone.
And then to start off side two, A Bit More of You.
Because we can't get enough.
That's right. Then Can't Stop Thinking About You, and Tired of Midnight Blue, Gray Cloudy Lies, and then the last track on the album is called His Name is Legs, Ladies and Gentlemen.
A lot of parentheticals. The parenthetical album, there's three parentheticals.
Including the title, add four. So yeah. It's might be a record of parenthetical songs.
And on the disc you get in the box set, the re-release disc, or if you buy it on your own, you'll also get another version of This Guitar with two parentheticals. Can't Keep from Crying, and then parenthetical again, Platinum Weird Version. We played that in a previous episode, and we'll bring that up when we talk about This Guitar.
All right.
Okay,
so ready?
Here we go. I can't wait. Oh, and this is the first time ever we finally figured out how to have Dave come up with some stuff and me play it, but I have no idea what's coming up. Because we had Dave pick the categories, and then I'll just say if I agree or not. So this should be fun.
Yes, definitely. So my first nominee for the category of Read All About It, which means the essentials, so not necessarily the greatest songs ever in George's catalog, but certainly what I would suggest that if you don't know this album, you should listen to. My first nominee is the song You.
Well, that's good because it's right on the top of my list.
Yeah, oh, good.
Why do you think it's essential?
It's in this album, which is generally built of rather slow songs. This is by far the peppiest and most energetic song, and to me, it's the most commercial sounding. It was that actual single, and hit number 20 in the U.S. It has a real polish to it. A little bit slick, maybe. Easy lyrics, some would say banal, but very simplistic type lyrics. And
yeah,
it has a Phil Spector influence. In fact, it was written for Ronnie Spector to sing, and she did record this. So it already has kind of a star quality to it. So I think it's the most catchy, and I like it probably the best.
I think it's pretty decent. It's got a good lick.
Yeah.
The lick sticks in your head. It sticks in your head even if you want to stop thinking about it. It's just kind of still going ding 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 ding.
Yeah, the guitar
probably
lick,
helped by the fact that they stick some more of it on there.
Right.
But it's not the hottest lick in the world or anything, you know.
Yeah.
And there is some throughout the album. but especially on this one, there's some pretty weak synths.
Played by the aforementioned David Foster.
Yeah. Now, the saxophone is really good on this. Yeah. I really like that. And the vocals are decent, but I just can't get over how too simplistic the lyrics are.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not much there.
No.
And it's a symptom of the whole album. It's a lot of very repetitive, simple lyrics.
True.
But I could see where it could. It's probably going to be in that category. It was a bit of a hit, not a huge hit.
Yeah, hit number 20 in the U.S., so not too bad. I think what stands out, though, that's always been a little hard for me to deal with is the fact that instead of changing the key, George just kept it at the same pitch level that Ronnie Spector, who's a woman, would have sung it at. So George sounds really strained on this, and maybe that gives it some character, but it is really high in his range.
Yeah, I wonder what a remake of this, had he recorded a remake of this about the same time he recorded this guitar.
Yeah.
Where the vocals were clearly a lot different range-wise, would be like, it'd yeah. probably help him out a lot.
Yeah, you know? Probably would. I think so. So
maybe he was being like, my critics say my voice is rough. I'm going to show them. I'll sing this one higher than Ronnie Spector ever did.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point. I think it is this album. Even if you don't like the album much, you'd probably agree his voice sounds a heck of a lot better than it did on Dark Horse.
Oh, yeah, for yeah. sure.
So
for sure.
At least there's that.
I think this one, too, the album as a whole, well, I'll get into more of that, but I think this one, maybe the mix is just a little bit off. Mm. If the synths could have been a little lower,
yeah.
maybe the vocal mix was up just a bit, I think it might have even had a little more punch
mm-hmm.
to it. Good drums, though. Good, definitely. Good track. Basically. So,
yeah, and that was actually a retread from All Things Must Pass. It was recorded at the same sessions as All Things Must Pass, and at some point we'll play there is actually an outtake version of it from that session, and we'll play that on a special unreleased song episode coming up in the future. So,
honestly, it comes off to me just a little bit as an unreleased track.
Unfinished.
That level
yeah.
of it, like, oh, this is an excellent unreleased track. So,
yeah.
I'd probably slide it into the read some about it.
Okay.
category myself.
There you go.
But that's, you know.
Yeah, fair okay. enough. All right. So my second song in the read all about it essentials category is the third track on the album, which is This Guitar Can't Keep From Crying. Myself out on a limb, but I'm happier than I ever been. But this guitar can't keep from crying. Learn to get up when I fall, can even climb from the stone wall. So This Guitar Can't Keep From Crying. I put that in the essentials list for a couple of reasons. One is I like the idea of the sequel. This is kind of a sequel to While My Guitar Gently Weeps. And so that's kind of you know, unique for that aspect. George seemed to like sequels. He did that a couple more times through his career.
Yeah, Here Comes the Moon,
right?
Yeah, and sequel.
Yeah, another sequel. I like those.
In fact, another one on this uses the phrase, isn't it a pity, a lot.
That's right.
I thought right. Well, maybe this is a bit of a, maybe he just didn't say this is a sequel to Isn't It a Pity.
All Things Must Pass, yeah. Oh. So I like that. I think it's a pretty strong arrangement. It's weak. The weakest part to me is the really bad bass, the synth bass that's here. And that's played by George. It's got that awful bass sound that's sort of, yeah. Remember on Bye Bye Love, on Dark Horse, it's
yeah,
wow, wow, wow,
wow, wow, wow, wow. Yeah,
that kind of thing. It really
used a lot in 80s Lou Reed stuff. Yeah. It's just like, hey.
Exactly. So that's pretty bad. But this is a pretty catchy song, I think, to me. And I like the pleading George vocal. And the guitar sounds great. It actually ends with kind of a jam. And you don't hear George jam out too much. He and Jesse Ed Davis are playing guitars on this one, and you don't really hear him jam. So I think his guitar playing is really strong.
I like this track too. If you remember, I think I picked this track as an underrated George tune back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Now I like the song even better that I've heard the fantastic bonus track, Platinum Weird version.
Yeah.
I implore you all to rush out and get Extra Texture just for that track. It's excellent. Very good. And it made me kind of reconsider this track a little bit, in that I think that they some of the mix in the recording subverts the qualities of the song.
Hmm.
Sometimes we just dismiss a song as a bad song, or I don't like that song. And I wonder sometimes if it just was arranged a little different, or if it was the vocals were really clear, yeah, as they are on the bonus track. You know, here they're a little bit muffled, but I do love that George pleading kind of singing. I kind of like the lyrics. You know, that bass sound is just, yeah. I thought it's a little bit corny,
mm,
that the guitar solos are so, are sort of like really trying to sound like crying.
Whiny crying.
A
yeah.
little bit.
Yeah.
But I love the sequel song, mm-hmm, Dave. And I found out in my research that George, this was so successful that George did even more sequels about crying guitars. Do you remember these?
No, what are they?
Do you remember, in parentheses, My Guitar's In Kleenex Box Palace? Do you remember that one?
I don't think I saw that one.
do you remember All Those Tears Ago, in parentheses, for My Guitar?
That's pretty good. I like that one.
this one, I'll sing this one. This guitar's got its cry set on Boohoo. When my guitar was sad, long time ago when it was sad.
Uh-huh. That's a good one.
And, of course, Handle My Guitar With Care.
Ah.
And in parentheses, or it will definitely cry.
George had a lot of crying, yeah, in his mind.
A lot of crying guitar songs.
A lot of crying. Who knew? I know. So yeah, so that lots of guitar crying sounds and crying vocals and all that stuff. So I do think it's a pretty good one, and I put that on my Read All About It list.
I as well will equal Read All About It.
Excellent. Well, I've got one more that's I couldn't quite decide. I put it into both categories of so-so and essentials, but we'll segue then into the essentials into the so-sos with this one, since it straddles both. I put the next track on that album, which is called Ooh Baby, You Know That I Love You.
Ah.
Ooh, baby, you know that I'd love you.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of George's soul-type music. And on the album itself, he actually says, this song is dedicated to Smokey Robinson. And if you remember, I think we in our underrated George album, I picked Learning How to Love You, which is the last track off of 33 and a Third. And I find a lot of similarities between these. But George seems really comfortable in this feel. It's very laid back, soulful. The guitar sounds really nice. The electric piano by Gary Wright is just very subtle. Simple lyrics, of course, but that's okay. It's not about the lyrics here. It's about the feel.
Yeah, so. I think this is a good song with somewhat garbage lyrics.
Yeah, that's why I couldn't give it quite an essential.
Other than the sort of weak lyrics, there's just maybe a little too much going on.
Hmm.
They could have pulled back on some of the whack, whack, wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of wah-wah flange stuff on there. Yeah.
You know what there is? There's too much texture.
Yeah.
They put like extra texture on this one. They should have just gone with adorable texture on this particular track. But I like it. I like it. I kind of like it in that read all about it category too.
Yeah.
Now that we're really talking about it. And it's this one and maybe one other track which will come up, I'm sure, just kind of stuck in my head a lot throughout the week.
It's a good melody.
Listening over and over and over again to this album.
Yeah. So those are my three that I would see, well, three essentials, three read all about it, and then we'll put that last one in kind of both categories as we move into the read some about it category.
Yeah.
Because of the kind of the weak lyrics, and it's a little bit long, about almost 4 minutes. That's one of the flaws of this album, I think, is that every song is almost every song is over 4 minutes, so it gets a little weary.
Yeah, a couple songs in particular.
Yeah, we'll come get
up,
to.
When they come up, we'll tear them apart.
Oh, there you go.
But,
right.
Okay, Dave, what's your next read some about it?
Okay, moving to our second category of so-so songs or reading some about it, I would put, should I skip around or go in order here?
Oh, yeah. Skip around.
All right, let's skip around. I'll put Gray Cloudy Lies into this category, which is towards the end of the album. And why don't we listen to a little of that?
Okay.
Yeah, so Gray Cloudy Lies.
Well, I could say...
what do you think?
I think it's it is a pretty average song. The main thing I complained about this album, one of the big things about almost every track, is its simplistic lyrics. And I think that this was the one song that didn't have simplistic lyrics and actually pretty good lyrics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The attitude of it is sort of depressing. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not sure why the stops and starts and walk, 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 was. And wee, wee's.
Yeah, there's an awful...
need to be in there. It's
awful
just,
bassoon... patch on the synthesizer is really bad.
Yeah, but I the complicated lyrics I enjoy.
Yeah,
and it kind of stuck in my mind. I think you said I woke up the other day thinking about Gray Cloudy Lies.
Yeah, I did. I did.
I was like, I don't know what's happening to me.
I know that's kind of scary, but it. I kept waiting for it to really grow on me, but it really never got to past a certain point.
Yeah,
Musically. I mean, lyrics are definitely better, but but they're it's just so plodding. PLODDING is kind of that same slow beat again, which by this point in the album, you're almost done. You've heard about four or five of those already.
Yeah, so. That's. I mean, I don't think if you asked 10 Beatles fans, not the great Beatles fans that listen to us that are very knowledgeable about everything, but 10 sort of your average run-of-the-mill guy on the street hasn't listened to our podcast Beatles fan about this song, he would be like, what? I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Never heard of it. Even if he's heard this album a bunch of times, probably. Yeah. Like, it just, I don't remember that one.
But it blends in. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so, another one that blends in to me in the same kind of way is the song Can't Stop Thinking About You. Which is also something I put in my second category.
Can't stop thinking about you. Can't stop thinking about you. It's no good living without you. Can't stop thinking about you. Can't stop thinking about you. Can't stop thinking about you. And it's no good living without you.
Now, this one I think has the opposite problem in that the music's really good. And in fact, I think it's the most melodic song on the album, and the chord changes in the, particularly in the bridge, are very interesting and complex. But the lyrics are just almost nothing.
Well, in that whole clip you just played, I don't think we heard anything but the title. It was just repeating. It's like My Love or something. Just keep repeating the title. Can't Stop Thinking About You with all sorts of woo-woo-woos. And
it's the one I had the least notes on.
Yeah.
It just, there's not much there, but I do like the melody a lot. It's really good. And if you just had if this was just an instrumental.
Yeah.
We'd be like, oh, that's not bad.
No. It seems like he's trying to make a hit, though, doesn't he? With something, it's a love song. It's not a philosophical, preachy kind of spiritual song. Just, you know, Can't Stop Thinking About You. Yeah. But it just doesn't quite. I like the music. I wrote down that I thought it was a little too overproduced, just too much stuff. There's strings.
Too much texture?
Yeah, too much. Yeah, this is way too much texture. There's not only regular strings, but then there's synth strings, and just too much on it. So, and again, that same beat, same slow ballad. So that made my so-so category.
You know, he could have been, you said it wasn't really with the rest of the theme of the song, but he could be singing this to the one critic that liked Dark Horse.
Yeah, could be. I can't just stop thinking
can't
about
stop
it.
Can't stop thinking about him.
Yeah, might be. So you never know. So that was another so-so song. Another so-so song.
Read some about it.
Yeah, read some about it here, would be the second one on the album called The Answer's at the End.
Don't be so hard on the ones that you love.
Now that we've been preached at, what do you think? What do you think of it, Dave?
Same beat again, slow ballad. I really don't like the bass playing of Paul Stallworth. And Paul, if you're listening, I apologize. I know you had some hits and you were in a good band later, but I don't think it works very well here. I like Klaus Voormann's bass much better on this album. It's okay. This one, it's very long though. It's 5.5 minutes, and it really doesn't change very much. Lyrically, there's some oddities, like you mentioned, the foibles,
yeah,
microscopic glass, kind of trying to be creative with some lyrics, but...
Well, and then he's like, isn't it a pity, yeah. Oh, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, are you trying to reference isn't it a pity, or are you not? I'm a little confused.
Self-reference.
Yeah. And then he plays a guitar solo that sounds just like another guitar solo from a different song. It's sort of like he is trying to do everything that he does best, but it comes off to me as completely inauthentic.
Mm.
It's like he's trying to sound profound.
Yeah.
You know, the answer's at the end. Read on at first. You know, which at least I like that ties to the album title. But read on, the answer's at the end. Like, well,
what
okay.
Answer? Yeah.
And then he tells us, you know, you don't pan up, you know, you're too hard on your friends.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm fine with I'm really nice to my friends.
Yeah.
How do you know that I'm not, you know? It just feels a little bit, you know, I mean, that's part of, you know, what he got criticized for at the time.
Mm.
And in fact, in Dark Horse and some of the previous things was being a little too preachy about his beliefs.
Yeah.
And that everybody else should have his beliefs. Well, this one is one where I sort of am sensitive to that, because I think it's just like, it's not even like anything really profound or really meaningful that he's trying to say. He's saying, be nice to your buddy.
Right. Yeah, you know? Exactly. So I have a couple more in the so-so category. Next one would be Tired. Let's skip sides here and go to Tired of Midnight Blue.
Oh, boy. Did that song make you wish you stayed home?
It did, actually. It made me tired a little bit.
Did
too.
It chill you to the bone?
Yeah, almost. Now, it starts out well, and it's actually cool because it's only four people. So it's Jim Keltner, Leon Russell on piano, and then the aforementioned Paul Stallworth on bass, and George, of course. A lot of piano songs on this album. I think Leon Russell's obviously a good pianist. I like that it's in a minor key. George in minor keys is cool, but just drags, and I don't like the stop-start nature of it either. It never gets going, and for a song that's 4 minutes and 50 seconds, it needs to get going.
So 3 minutes into this song, I wrote a song, and that song's title is Tired of Midnight Blue. It just feels like it just won't end.
Yeah,
and it does stick in your head this doodle do do do, but not in a good way. And more so than that, this is one of the songs that as as well as Gray Cloudy Lies and one we haven't touched on yet, that is just so bitter and so upset about. So he gets criticized, right, by critics. He's bulletproof. He's a beetle.
Yeah.
So he should just not respond to that, right?
Yeah.
He should, but there. In fact, there's a Buddhist principle, which is called the second arrow, which is like if you get shot with an arrow, and the arrow is so like if someone says something bad to you or something, that's the first arrow, but you shoot the second arrow, choose to shoot the second arrow into yourself, which is you feeling bad about it, you being upset, you having an emotion about it. Well, I think he does that, and then he shoots a third arrow, which is I'll get back at these critics and write this song. Mm-hmm. And then there's a fourth arrow, which unfortunately goes right into our ears as a listener, pierces us right to the bone.
Yes.
So for me, I dip that one down to don't read all about it.
Okay, that goes in probably, the bottom.
It may be my, well, let me think about that.
Yeah, but I don't know. Hold that thought. Yeah.
At least favorite track on X.
Hold that thought.
Okay.
Okay, I've got one more song for our middle category of so-sos or read some about it, and that's the, you referenced it, I think. It's another somewhat bitter song, and the bitterness is already in the title, World of Stone.
You like that Steve Winwood walk-walk sound there?
Yeah, there's some pretty good wah-wah from David Foster there on the arp strings and George on the guitar as well. David Foster playing some pretty soulful piano, though, I must say. That is somewhat redeems it.
Yeah. I think the piano and some of the music playing, I like this sort of there's sort of a strange little pickup of tempo.
Yeah. Yeah,
in the middle of it, I kind of like puts it in the read some about it category, but really vague platitudes and of world made of stone, like who? What's so bad about stone? Stone's good for
they're
us,
cold
right?
Though, right? They're cold.
Yeah,
I guess.
Well, it's such a cold, dark, desolate world, and I'm so far away from where I need to be. No.
I know.
It's just depressing. It's. I mean, I'm not a guy who hates depressing songs, too. I like the Smiths.
Yeah. You like Lou Reed.
Yeah. But, sheesh.
I know. For me, it's another one of the dragging songs that just plods along slow. Too many slow ones in a row.
Well, this one, too, I wanted to say this before about the whole album, and I think now that we've heard a lot of these tracks, it's a good time to bring it up. Like, at some point, a sort of profound-sounding choir...
Oh, yeah,
Intention to be in a profound-sounding choir comes in, but they're not... They're just sort of sloppy and
And uncredited, too. It doesn't even say who sings it.
It's just sort of like the choir's there and the piano's playing very loud and its vocals are at the same level, I think. And in fact, George even himself said that, the arrangements were the bad thing about it, like not very good arrangements and something like that in an interview.
Yeah, it just it's a, to me, a weak closer for the first side of the album too. And so maybe that's why, as we now segue into the "Don't Read All About It" examples here, I only have two, and one of them isn't because it's bad. It's just pointless. And although now, in retrospect, "A Bit More of You," which is the how the second side starts out, in retrospect, maybe it's George thought, well, I have all these slow songs. We need to wake up the audience here a little bit with 45 seconds of the sax solo from "You," or like a little sax of the break in it. So it's just no point really to it at all. We'll go out with it today, but.
Well, it's so strange to me on here because A, you isn't that great. You know, if "You" was like really amazing, then hearing a little more of that amazing song would be something.
Yeah.
Instead, it's just going back to sort of like the same lick from reminding you of this lick. and you know, we just did Venus and Mars a little bit ago. Venus and Mars has Venus and Mars Reprise.
Yeah.
And I feel like that earns its placement on the album. Mm-hmm. Sort of like, oh, here's a different, we're going into sort of an altered, different thing's going to happen from here.
Yeah.
This is just coming back to a little bit of music for no good reason.
No.
And just so, really bizarre. One of the most worthless things that I've ever seen on an album. So
so that's in my forgettable category. And then the only other track is the last song on the album.
Which
definitely goes into the "Don't Read All About It" category, and that's "His Name Is Legs," and then in parentheses, "Ladies and Gentlemen." Ugh. Ooh, yeah. So that was a song written for Legs, Larry, and then in parentheses, or in quotation marks, Smith. A member of the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band.
I don't like this for so many reasons.
Yeah.
One, again, the mix is so terrible that you can't hear the lyrics really very clearly. It's very like, it's a classic George sort of muffly singing. And they particularly made it worse by the arrangement. So you can't hear what's going on until you've seen the lyrics.
No.
And then God forbid you actually look at the lyrics because it's, everything is dinky-doo.
It's trying to be funny, right?
They're trying to be funny. Okay, but I just, because, you know, we give him the benefit of the doubt because he, you know, we've seen him be humorous in the Beatles.
Oh, yeah.
And I always hear this thing, which is like, well, he's friends with the guys from Monty Python. That's like saying if I was friends with Derrick Rose that I can play basketball. No. You know, it's like it's not in his talent wheelhouse. Or it's like saying that John Cleese could make a hit song, you know. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So he's just trying to make this joke song, references Loopy Lou, a sausage roll,
dinky doo. It's also the longest song by far on the album too, which makes it even more tedious, about 5 minutes and 45 seconds.
And then it goes into a chit-chat in both ears thing. sort of like the Velvet Underground did in the Murder Mystery on their third album. But at least that you could like turn it to one side and like hear the story going on or whatever. It's just, you know,
lame attempt at being funny and closing out the album.
It's an inside joke.
Right.
That his name is Legs.
Yeah.
That's like the big, when they get to his name is Legs. It's like, it's like, whoa, get it, everyone. It's just crickets.
Yeah.
From the audience. I just don't, if something positive to say about it is it's just a sort of jingle jangly. You know, if it's on in the other room, you probably wouldn't race in there and turn it off.
Right.
I much like most of the album, it's a complete just kind of passes you by and you're not affected too much by it.
Mm-hmm. And so that's probably a good segue here to close up here and talk about how to rate this album, and especially in relation to Dark Horse, which I think we gave, I don't remember, but I want to say we were giving it maybe a 6 or something along those lines. Would you rate this album higher or equivalent or lower to Dark Horse?
Well, I'd say because of the simplistic lyrics with the vague platitudes, the terrible production, the bad mixing, the instrumentation, especially the synths.
Yes, but it was the 70s, right?
The way too long of songs and the super duper negative vibe of it. And to me, the album cover might be redeeming the version you have, the actual original album, which kind of slides in and out.
Yeah.
But I think all of those things combined together, there are a couple of decent tracks on it.
Four. Okay. Wow.
I was almost going to go 3, but I got to do 4 just because there's a couple things I really like.
Yeah. Not surprisingly, I'll be a little more generous. and the reason is, thinking in context, it's George sounds a lot better in terms of his singing. And I mean, for the most part,
if you could hear it,
if you can hear it over the muffled mixing. And I, to be honest, I've not heard the remastered version yet. So I will be interested to hear that. But I would probably, on the basis of some of the instrumental playing and some of the good tunes or the good musical quality that's marred by some of the production, I'd probably give it a 5, I think, in this case.
That's real generous.
Well,
I think that's real generous.
Yeah, I was trying to think, is it better than Dark Horse or not? But the songs I like on Dark Horse, I like a lot better than the songs I like on this album.
Yeah, so, in fact, you know what I did is I listened to this so many times this week, and then last night I was here and I listened to it once again, and I had an activity I was going to do for another hour, so I was like, I want to hear something different, please, Lord. So I put on George Harrison.
Oh yeah.
And the comparison of this and that mix wise is like night and day. I mean, it's just so I wonder if this album had been mixed as well and produced as well as that album was, which have songs which similarly are kind of like, you know, lyrically sort of maybe so-so, but they're so much improved by that. Like, Here Comes the Moon, you know?
Yeah.
Here Comes the Moon, the Moon, the Moon, the Moon is the lyrics of it. But it's so much, it sounds out and the guitars are
sparkly,
great.
Sparkly and,
yeah,
great sound.
So I just feel like, you know, I feel like that's what really does it in for me.
Yeah.
So I think it's one of his worst albums.
Yeah, I would agree.
It is a read some about it album. Just barely. Yeah, just definitely. Barely.
Yeah, so that does it for our look at Extra Texture, Read All About It. And I think it's interesting for where it is, but I wouldn't go necessarily seek it out unless you are feeling really mellow or down on life or I don't know.
Or you just can't stop thinking about
us. Or you can't stop thinking about us. And if you can't stop thinking about us, you can hear us on Stitcher. You can hear us on iTunes, everywhere else. Join our Facebook page. We're getting close to 200 likes on the page. So tell your friends. Spread the word.
We're going to have lots of episodes coming up. We might have another interview maybe coming up. We had Dave, you did a great job with the interview a couple episodes ago.
So that was just fun.
Really enjoyed I really did hard work on that one.
You listened real hard.
Listened to it and enjoyed it. It was a really good interview. So
great.
Follow us at I've Got a Beatles on Twitter. We're posted Song of the Night almost every night. Sometimes they're, I've heard from at least one person, a little late. They're
probably
because I post them when I get home sometimes, and I get home from a second rehearsal after work. So, if they're, our West Coast people probably like
it. There we go. It's perfect for them. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Or our overseas friends.
Yes, indeed. So, great. Well, thanks a lot for listening, and I think we're going to go out with probably the peppiest song on the album. We'll do just because we're gonna. It works out for bumper music here to end things. It's perfect timing. So we'll go out with A Bit More of You, and we'll talk to you next time.